Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. Where Jake will be heard to say... That really wasn't a say. That was more of a throat clearing.
Well, I was heard to clear my throat.
Ah, well.
That's what you'll hear me say.
And Jeff will be heard to say, that's very interesting.
Fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. And you will promptly hear our disclosure that the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of a multimedia radio presentation, radio and internet presentation, it is also the name of an investment advisory firm located in Salado, Texas, that manages investment portfolios for people and is registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission as its primary regulator.
Yes, we got that nice. Away. And, now we're done.
Right. And presuming that today is August 22nd, Saturday, year of our Lord 2015, actually 2015, if we want to say that correctly, because 2015 would be a completely different set of numbers, then you may give us a call in here. If you're in East Bell County, you can call, well, actually from anywhere, you could call like 254 and then dial 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else. You want to finish that? Okay. Within the sounds of our voices.
Oh, good, yes.
He looks at me like I'm not completed a sentence.
Oh, okay. Well, nothing interesting happened in the markets this week.
Depends on the definition of the word interesting.
Oh, well, maybe something interesting did happen in the markets this week, but I even understand why.
That something did or did not happen?
Yeah. I understand what happened in the market and why it happened, and I found the article in the Financial Times that described perfectly why the market plunged this week. Well, plunged is probably not a good point. The Dow drops more than 1,000 points, according to Barron's.
Well, over the week, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what it said. I mean, and that means...
That's a pretty good plunge.
For the week, it's down 5.82%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Year-to-date, it's down 7.65. 52 weeks, it's down 3.18. And the Dow, unlike the S&P, is now 10%, a little over 10% below its
high.
Its peak.
Which means it is in a correction.
Yes, but the correction has not yet been confirmed by the Standard & Poor's 500 Stock Index. So there's a great debate among market academics as to whether this is a real correction or a fake correction.
Is this a correction? And what's even more important, in my opinion, is that while we all sort of semi-agree on the definition of the word correction, there is no authority that determines when a correction is happening. So,
are you trying to say there's no controlling legal authority?
Yes, Mr. Gore.
Vice President Gore.
Vice President Gore, yes.
No, you would be the Vice President Gore. I would be the Senator. You say, yes, Senator.
Yes, Senator. I do not recall that. All right. sorry, that's just my normal response to senators. If Senator talks to me, I say, I do not recall, Senator. That's learned well from C-SPAN.
The S&P 500 is not quite down 10%. The NASDAQ, of course, being the leading indicator that it is, I think actually was down a total of over 10%.
Well, this is something that I think is just as important as the market dropping and being in a correction, is that last week at this time, we both said that we expected a correction in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, I told you so.
Hold on, my shoulder just came out of joint. I was patting myself on the back.
And we published a newsletter, rather, several weeks ago, actually a couple of months ago now, that said we're well overdue. Actually, this
well
is the
overdue.
Second newsletter in a row we've said, hey, we're way overdue for correction.
And we said, expect to see it before October.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's still before October.
Well, it is in some places. My daughter, his sister, had a birthday. However, since she is on the other side of the Pacific Ocean,
she's in the Komodo Island, to be exact.
Yes, and there's there was some question as to when her birthday was, because
it was her birthday the day before it was her birthday.
Yeah, she was celebrating her birthday the day before her birthday arrived here. Now, she was born here, but she was there And so it was the date of her birthday there, but it wasn't yet the date of the birthday where she was born. So which day was her birthday? And I loved her response.
What was that?
She responded to me that I'm having two birthdays this year.
Ah, yes. Well, there was a man that just got given the Guinness record for the longest birthday.
Really?
He arranged his air travel to put him around the world, and I believe it was a 46-hour birthday.
There's something to be said for that. I'm not sure what it is to be said for
that. My opinion is that doesn't seem like a very comfortable birthday.
Well, if you look up on the wall here where we normally have an analog clock.
It's gone.
Time has ceased to exist.
The analog world is done.
So I think what's happened is time has ceased to exist here at the KTM radio station.
Either that or it's just in digits.
Well, looking at the control panel here, I would say Back to the Past is the name of the movie.
All right, anyway, so I have some news to talk about. You have some news to talk about. We have some, the market dropped.
I know why the market dropped.
Oh, please inform us.
I mean, I completely understand why. And you really have to go, the Financial Times was the only newspaper that covered it.
Mm. I know why. Let me throw one out.
Right.
Existing home sales increased 10.3% versus a year ago.
No.
Unemployment has dropped.
No, it's because
earnings are up across the market.
No.
None of those things would cause.
Now, that would make perfectly good sense.
Yeah, those are normally things that would cause the market to drop.
Paris suffers baguette shortage.
Oh, there we go. There is the key to why the market dropped.
I'm serious. I'm actually serious here. Up until this year, the law in Paris was that bakers' vacations were regulated by a central authority so that each neighborhood would have at least one baker at all times on duty and not on vacation.
Does this apply to candlestick makers, though?
No, just bakers.
Just bakers, not butchers.
The French are very, they
particular.
Must have their bread.
The bread is important.
Fresh bread every day, yes. Baguettes specifically.
Sticks.
Right. And, they call a stick a bag, which is really weird. A female bag.
That's a little weird. And it's all bread.
And this year, in order to stimulate the market forces in the economy, the French elected to no longer regulate when Parisian bakers took vacations.
Of course that's going to cause a correction in the Dow.
So what happened is, apparently, the vast majority of French bakers are currently on vacation. The French are having to eat stale bread.
Oh, no.
And as a result,
this bread tastes the same as my cigarette.
The buying effort, the actual sale, the economic activity concerning fresh bread in Paris has gone completely askew because all of the market makers in bread basically
left.
Took a vacation at the same time. And that's exactly why in August we very typically see a correction.
Yes.
The people who buy stocks
are
all
on
took
vacation.
A vacation at the same time.
Right. Exactly. What are you doing at the end of this week?
Going on vacation.
What am I doing at the end of this week?
I have no idea.
Going on vacation.
Ladies and gentlemen, the correction will probably extend well into another couple of weeks because the two principals at the Personal Wealth Coach are going on vacation. As a matter of fact, next week at this time, you will even hear, instead of stale baguettes, you will get stale the Personal Wealth Coach radio
where we will speak again about stale baguettes.
Because I will be, I'm going to be on the highway headed to Colorado. Where are you going?
I'm heading down to the beach, you know, the Texas coast, where I will experience waves and sand.
And water.
The waves have something to do with water, but it could be of green.
Well, now you could just, when you're there, make sure the coast is clear.
I will. I will verify that the coast is clear.
And then you can come back and report on it.
If it's not clear, I'll let you know that as well.
That's very good. That's very good. If there's a hurricane that comes in, we must be politically correct now.
Him, her, doesn't matter.
Right. So that's why, in essence, the market crashed. Now, that isn't good news, because people will say, what? Let's regulate the vacations of all the stockbrokers.
Right. So the excuse that's being given is that China's growth rate is coming in at what we expected it to be.
Right. About 6 point something as opposed to 7 point something.
Right. But if you've listened to us at all, you've heard us say that we expect the growth rate in China to continue to slow for a while. If you read the financial press at all, you realize that most economists pretty well expected that China was going to have slower growth. But that causes imminent panic when it actually happens. So the reality is that the news isn't what caused it, but it really is a sexy way of making a headline.
That, and about a week ago, the Chinese effectively revalued their currency by about 3%.
Yes.
Which, because the people on Wall Street are really stupid, it took them a week to figure out that that should cause a market crash.
Either that, or it had nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Oh, come on.
Oh,
yeah,
no, wait a minute. Wait, look at these headlines. They say for sure it had something to do with it. Okay, so that revaluation of the yuan.
Yes, which took it back a little bit closer to where it was a few years ago.
Right. It devalued the currency by 3% against the dollar.
Right.
Which is something that we in the United States have been asking them to do for many years. So they've been incrementally doing this. They did it. It was not unexpected.
Actually, we were asking them to raise the value of the currency, which they've been doing for several years. But they let it drop back about 3%.
The reason why they let it drop back is because the dollar has been increasing in strength and the yuan has been linked to the dollar, and therefore this big exporting country known as China, the factory of the world. This is where we know God exists in China, by the way.
It does.
God created everything, and everything is made in China.
So, I never heard that point of theology.
There you go.
I
mean,
we're
going
to have to dwell on that
for a while.
We're going to have to search the scriptures.
Positive.
Yes.
So when you recognize that if their currency value is going up with the dollar, it makes it harder for them to sell their products to the world, except to the United States, because the world is looking at the dollar as becoming more and more expensive. It means that the products of China become more expensive with the dollar.
Actually, what happened out there is a random event occurred, which is the correction in this case. It's a it's a random event. Now, the random event is increased in probability that's going to happen simply because the people who make major purchases are on vacation.
Right. People that make sales don't go on vacation by definition.
And the last thing they say on the way out the door is, if don't lose any money, bail out if the market looks like it's going to go down, and then they head off for wherever they go on vacation. And so the underlings are sitting there on with their finger on the sell button, starting in July and running into October.
Oh.
And once one of them hits the sell button and it starts down, the rest
everybody
of them
else
all
hits
start
the same
punching
button.
The sell button.
Yes. And like, oh no. And the people on vacation call up and, You did what? Wait, no, that's not what I meant.
Actually, the people on vacation probably have turned their cell phones
off.
Right,
so it's probably a good idea. When they come back, there will be a chewing out of high order, but then they'll be excited because everything is on sale, because the news that I was just giving you about the economy of the United States is true. Existing home sales are up 10.3% over a year ago. The unemployment rate...
So the market should immediately decline.
Wait a minute. Let's see. It looks like revenue's up. It looks like things are more profitable. Let's look through here. It looks like more people
have
jobs.
Sell. Yes.
Wait a minute. What this means is it looks like the economy's improving. Let's get out of it immediately.
Right.
And that's
You do understand the psychology of the market.
Yeah. It is completely counterintuitive.
Right.
The people involved are scared, so they make decisions that really don't make a lot of sense. But for those of us that are in it for the long term, we smile really, really big smiles when this sort of thing happens, because everything's on sale.
Actually, corrections are very good things. Without them, the market becomes really crazy, and stocks that shouldn't have high values wind up with high values, and eventually the whole thing comes tumbling down. Little corrections along the way are very, very, very healthy.
We want them.
Doses of reality.
Get rid of the deadwood.
There's probably, and I can almost say with certainty, there's some air in the market and it needs to be let out.
Mm-hmm.
And but I will also say that the leading economic indicators and all the other things that tell us what's going on in the next 6 to 12 months continue to tell us the same thing, and that is that things are going to be better a year from now than they are today. And the fact that there's a correction going on is solely related to the fact that there's a correction going on.
The oil prices have dropped. This is another piece of news. It's down at $40.28 for a barrel of oil.
That's West Texas Intermediary.
Right. How crude.
Intermediate.
How
yeah,
crude.
But interestingly enough, on Friday, for a moment,
it dropped below $40 a barrel.
It dropped below $40 a barrel, and that caused a lot of people to be very afraid that gasoline
was going to become inexpensive,
and people would buy more of it.
Oh, dear! Wait a minute. Is that bad news?
Well, it is.
I thought that was good news.
It is if you own an oil company.
Well, it is if you own a wildcatter oil company.
Well,
this is something I wanted to address.
Even the big oil companies value themselves on, they buy all this oil, and when the price
right.
goes up, they record a profit.
Right.
And when the price goes down, they have to report a loss.
Well, this is a fascinating thing that's happening in the fracking world right now. This last month, the number of oil rigs on order increased while the price of oil dropped.
Mm-hmm.
This is an unusual event, but
mm-hmm.
not really.
Yeah.
What's going on is called consolidation. The big companies that have been conservative in their approach on how they're selling their, how they're getting rid of their profits, that aren't the wildcatter types that are operating on loans and pushing all of their equipment and personnel to the limit to try to get as much money as they possibly can. Those guys went out of business. However, the fact that they are out of business, they're not able to pump oil right now, is a good thing for the big oil companies, because the big oil companies look around and they see a fire sale. Not exactly, because that's a little dangerous.
Well, actually, the fire sale is going on across the western United States.
Right. That's a different sale. But North Dakota and Texas is experiencing a consolidation. A lot of the oil wells that were being drilled or fracked by people that have not really been in the oil business for very long. They just say, I think I can find oil in that there field. Very similar to the gold bubble, where we saw people who have never mined for gold heading up to Alaska with equipment that was not suited and trying to make a profit. And lo and behold, they made a profit because the price of gold was so high. Well, the same thing was going on with oil. The price of oil was $140 a barrel, which meant that if you got any oil out of the ground, you were profitable. Didn't matter how poorly you did it. Well, now the companies that needed the oil to be at $80 or $90 or $100 a barrel to make profit because they weren't doing a very efficient job at getting the oil out are out of business, but the equipment that they purchased and that they put into the ground is there already, and the big oil companies are buying it from them. Or they're saying, oh, you're out of money? Well, we'll give you some money for all of that equipment
right.
and those leases that you own.
There's another factor in the price of the drop of oil, though. For one thing, the oil pumping rate is going up.
Right.
A big surplus of oil is continuing to build, and for a very good reason.
It's a lot of other factors.
If you owe money, you drilled a bunch of wells, and you fracked, and you're pumping oil out of the ground, and you owe money, you've got loan payments you have to make, you've already got your upfront expenses committed.
Yep. Sunk cost in the ground.
Literally. And so no matter how low the price of oil goes,
you gotta
keep pumping oil to make your payments. And interestingly enough, the lower the price of oil goes in this circumstances,
the
more oil you have to pump, which is why we're getting huge surpluses of oil. Meanwhile, over in Saudi Arabia, there is a double incentive for the kingdom of Saud to
keep the pipes open.
To keep the price of oil as low as they can and pump as much as they can. One,
they want to keep market share in the United States.
They want to keep market share. But there's another reason for it, too. And that is, there's this country near Saudi Arabia.
Right.
that is called Iran.
Well, let's call it correctly, because the root Iran comes from the Aryan Mountains.
Okay.
Aryan Mountains.
The Iran. Aryan, the Iran, but it looks like Iran when you write
right,
it.
Right, right.
Which is also the name of a town in Texas. It's actually Iran.
Iran.
Iran. And the end result is that they don't want the Iranians getting a lot of money.
And the Iranians right now are about to have a big marketplace open
right.
up to them because of new diplomatic ties.
And so the Saudis can make a nice profit at $20 a barrel. They used to make a nice profit at $20 a barrel, and they still can make a profit at $20 a barrel.
Their social programs are going to suffer for a while, but they have a big sovereign fund for
right.
that.
So the issue is that there's a lot of reasons that the price of oil is going down. But now let's look at the negatives.
Well, there's more in there, too. We'll get to that. Go
okay.
ahead. Let's hit the negatives.
Well, no. Tell me the more.
Okay. One other aspect here is that the Saudis, in keeping their market share, they want to maintain a supply line to the United States. If they're actively discounting the price on oil being sold to the United States, they are selling oil to us cheaper than they're selling oil to Germany. Cheaper than they're selling oil to anyone else in the world.
The Germans did not come and stop the Iraqis from invading.
Right. Well, that's not the reason for the discount.
Well, that's one of the
it's
reasons.
It's a nice reason, but that's not why they're doing it, because they're not selling to the United States government. They're selling to Exxon. They're selling to these different companies to refine. And the reason why they're putting the discount on it is because with the cost of shipping across the ocean, their oil is more expensive than our oil,
mm-hmm.
which means they have to discount it for us to buy it. And they want us to continue to buy it, because if we stop buying it, then all those independent tanker companies stop shipping oil from Saudi Arabia to the United States. And they start shipping oil from Saudi Arabia to somewhere else, or from Iran to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time to get those tankers around to the Mediterranean. There's some nice canals, but it takes a long time. It's expensive. And they don't like to go places with empty boats.
Why?
It's one of those things where it seems like it would be more efficient to travel that way.
Right.
I mean, the fuel costs go way down, but they don't make any profit.
Ah.
So
it all has to do with the profit.
It does. The profit of Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Somehow we got into religious terminology. So the concept
here... Wait a minute. Our religion here is capitalism,
right.
and we worship the profit.
Right. Yes, we definitely worship the profit. So these ships are not wanting to leave the route from Saudi Arabia to the United States
because
They're leaving Saudi Arabia full of crude oil,
mm-hmm.
getting to the United States, refining the oil, and going back with gasoline and other refined products to Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia doesn't refine as much as we do. We do a lot more of the refining process. So if that gets interrupted, the ability for the Saudis to sell to the United States drops off dramatically, because the ability to get the oil here goes away. So that's a big piece. But then you've got Russia, who's pumping at the highest rate that they have, that they're just trying to pump as hard as they can. You've got ISIS pumping oil just as fast as they can get it out of the ground. You've got Nigeria pumping oil just as fast as they can to get it out of the ground, because they need it to fund wars.
Right.
And usually a war in the Middle East would cause the prices to drop, or to go way up, I'm sorry. Instead, it's causing the oil prices to drop right now,
mm-hmm.
because we have enough.
Right. There's another aspect in it, American foreign policy. You mentioned that they don't sell oil directly to the United States. However, it is definitely, you know, whether or not...
We buy it for the strategic oil reserve occasionally.
Whether or not we're doing this, I don't have any direct evidence of it. But it's obviously in our foreign policy advantage that the price of oil get really low for two reasons.
Yeah.
One...
Russia is not a danger anymore.
Russia has been very, very low key since the oil price dropped, because they're losing money.
It's really hard to fund mm-hmm. battles. And
if you think it's hard to ship oil across the oceans,
it's a lot harder to dig.
Try getting it out of Siberia to wherever it is it needs to go.
It's an expensive prospect.
So the other And the other side of that is, it's in the United States' best interest that even though we are we have an agreement with Iran and they're going to start exporting oil,
not to us.
They're going to start.
We're still not going to buy it directly from them. But the Germans and the British and a whole bunch of other people are.
They're
going to
start exporting oil, and when they do, the United States probably is not at all interested in seeing a lot of money flow into Iran.
Right.
So basically, if oil is dirt cheap, then the Iranians won't have a lot of money, and they will be busy with the money they do have trying to update their oil field infrastructure and not have as much money for Hezbollah.
Right. So I'm going to make a weird statement here.
Oh. ISIS, price of oil is going to stay low.
Yeah, that's true. I would almost say that most people that have heard us just talking would figure that out for themselves. It's going to stay low for a very long time. ISIS's emergence as a organization is because of oil prices.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is war in Yemen and Syria is still in a civil war is directly attributable to fracking. And I'm going to go back a little bit. Let's go back in time. Because
that's a new one to me. Fracking causes war
in the Middle East,
Syria. Yes. I'm waiting. Go ahead.
So I'm going to begin at the beginning rather than my tantalizer.
At the very beginning?
Not the very beginning, because we're not going to go back that far. Mm. So what we will go back to is the Arab Spring, 2006, 2007. There was the largest exporter of wheat in the world had just become Russia. They passed up the United States, partly because the United States started producing a lot more corn because of a congressional act that said we needed to have ethanol in our fuel. So Congress passes an act that says we need ethanol in the fuel.
Which makes the farmers in Iowa really happy.
Right. Farmers in Iowa start producing a lot of corn rather than wheat.
And where is the first presidential sort of primary? It's not really a primary.
Right. It's in Iowa. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So farmers start producing corn instead of wheat, which causes tortilla riots in Mexico because the price of corn went up. Because ethanol was being used and the amount of corn being used to feed people went down. So the price of corn went up, tortillas went up. Russia immediately becomes the number one wheat producer in the world. And the following year, they have a very, very wet summer. It decimates the wheat and causes them to cease all exports of wheat. So the number one exporter of wheat in the world, it's supplying wheat to all over the world, stops exporting. So if you go back to the beginning of the Arab Spring, it started with bread riots. People strapping breadsticks to their heads. So your reference to the baguettes in Paris is
I'm very much. You really want to understand the world economy, follow the price of bread.
Right, bread. And if this goes back to Rome, bread and circuses. This goes way back. So bread prices going up caused instability in the Middle East. At the same time that we were developing a new technology to produce oil in the United States, fracking, we were able to produce oil much faster than we have ever before. We passed up Russia as the number one producer of oil. Does that sound interesting that Russia is teetering in these two areas? So wheat and oil were the two big things Russia was doing it. They passed up Saudi Arabia. We passed them up. The peace that has existed in the Middle East has come from one source massively for the past 40 years, and that is the American foreign policy has said, you guys don't make war over there or we're going to come in and stomp you flat because we need your oil. There are other reasons for it too, because we don't like human rights violations and all of that, but that's not keeping us.
That's propaganda.
Yeah, it's not making us invade Syria right now. It's not that. I mean, we're just kind of destabilizing the stuff over there. We're not trying to stop the conflict. We're not trying to step into Yemen and say, stop fighting over here. We're not trying to go into Iraq and calm everything down. We've done it in the past. The foreign policy of the United States hasn't changed very much from one president to the next, no matter what party they're in. We've made a change, and the change has to do with the interests of the United States. We don't need Middle Eastern oil anywhere near as much as we used to. And so ISIS exists. Because otherwise we would have stopped it.
I never really would have made that connection, but I think you're completely correct.
There you go. So and
basically, left to their own means, the various tribes in the Middle East will slaughter each other.
Yes. Well, they will until there's nothing to slaughter each other about anymore. The population of the Middle East has boomed. Because if you look at Saudi Arabia in particular, all it takes is another 6 or 7 years of the same kind of price of oil that we see today, and Saudi Arabia is going to collapse. Because the Saud family is providing social welfare programs that basically says everybody goes to school all the way through college for free. They get a paycheck every month even if they don't have a job. They basically, no one has to work if they don't want to. All the oil wells are drilled by Texans. They don't drill their own oil. I mean, it's a very
And they definitely don't refine their own
They
oil.
Don't refine it. They don't drill it. They're fighting over the resources because we pay them based on our laws and based on the property rights of the people that own the land. Well, if they continue to exist as they are, they're not going to have the ability to pay off their people, buy them bread with oil revenue because they won't have the money anymore. And you see what happened in Syria over that. It's a continuation. And we're going to care less and less and less because they have less and less ability to touch us. But it also leads to instability, lots of unemployment, which causes people to get radicalized and go to France and get on trains.
When we get back, I'm going to tell you another reason the market went down.
Okay.
That has to do with oil. And but meanwhile, back at the ranch, wherever the ranch is, you are listening to KTEM and the Personal Wealth Coach. And our telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And that's assuming that today is August 22nd, 2015. If it's a different date where you are, don't try to call because the time warp won't work. And we're going to play these back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. In this episode, or this portion of this first hour on August 22nd, 2015, Jake is going to reveal something else about the cost of oil.
Yes. Overnight, Venezuela declared martial law. Why does this have anything to do with fracking, ISIS, and the price of Brit?
I am waiting for this, yes. And the price of rusty razor blades.
In Yugoslavia.
Except Yugoslavia doesn't
exist
anymore.
The old Yugoslavia, right. Yes. All right, so there's a lot of smuggling going on in Venezuela. Because the government of
Venezuela.
Well, into Venezuela.
And into Venezuela. Right. Okay, in and out of Venezuela.
Yes.
Yeah. Venezuela.
Yes. The government there has provided social programs for many years based on the price of oil. We're all pretty well aware of that, sort of, in the back of our minds.
Right.
It's not very good oil, but as long as oil is really expensive, they can do a lot of very good social programs and keep in power. Now, the fact that that Chavez died and his Maduro, his successor, is not as popular as he was.
He's not as adroit.
Right.
That's a good word. That's my word for adroit.
He is not as popular, not as adroit. He's working about things, but because the price of oil has dropped, they've dropped their subsidy on gasoline, on petrol. They've dropped their subsidy on bread. So
okay, here we go with bread and oil again.
Bread and oil again. Yes. These are things that I mean.
There's something Italian in
this. Right. There's a very it's just like olive oil, only it's not. You don't eat this oil.
Well, I mean that the Italians love to mix their bread and their oil.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead.
The smuggling has been getting worse and worse because some of the smuggling happens to be from stealing petrol and bread from the government. They steal it and they sell it. Well, they killed several soldiers in the process and some civilians died in the process. So Maduro declared martial law, and it's the same thing. This is a failing state. It's a state that's failing because the only reason why it existed was a lot of people all over the world were willing to give Venezuela a lot of money because they had oil. The fact that the oil, in many cases, the revenue on that oil was stolen revenue, and that the country of Venezuela nationalized a lot of investments by foreigners, said all of these oil fields, all of the equipment belongs to us now, leave. The World Court has held that they owe a lot of money to these companies. This is part of the reason why they've had to remove some of the subsidies on their own products, on their own petrol, so that they can pay through the World Court these big companies that have sued them because they stole their equipment without paying them. It's very much like Cuba, which is why Venezuela and Cuba get along so well. They just say, we're going to nationalize everything. You rich people don't need this money.
We need to be rich people.
Right. We will be rich because you were rich before and it's our turn now.
Right.
Okay. So, we've got martial law in Venezuela because they, at a time when everyone needed them because they had oil, made a lot of decisions that made it so that people don't like them very much. But we needed them. Now we don't need them so much. The price of oil is coming down, and they're having a failed state. It's Nigeria. It's Syria. It is, I mean, it's, you see it across the world.
This whole process in economics is called the Dutch curse.
Yes, yes, it is.
And for those of you who are not familiar with that particular aspect of economics, there was a time period when the Dutch, by accident, through some strange mutation, wound up with tulips that were variegated in color. Tulips were pretty standard
one
plants.
One color at a time, yes.
And nobody completely knows how this happened, but it was an unusual event, a mutation. As a result, the Dutch were able to produce tulip bulbs that grew tulips that had multiple colors on them, and they became suddenly in demand around the world.
This was a tech bubble of the time.
Right. The Dutch, this is in the 1600s, the Dutch were exporting tulip bulbs and became fabulously wealthy, followed by a time period when the Dutch went into a depression of depressions, a horrific depression in the 1600s.
Well, there's one up to this point in time, the only way to produce a tulip was from another tulip, one-to-one. You could not make two tulips from one tulip.
Right.
You have a tulip bulb, you get a tulip bulb. There's no multiplication.
Right.
Well, they figured out how to multiply it, and the Dutch
figured out how to multiply it.
Yes, they said, oh, well, if you just cut this around a little bit, oh, actually, look at that. We get two tulips.
Actually, it's happened twice in the Netherlands. Once it happened with tulip bulbs, and the other time it happened with wool. They were able to produce the cloth wool through their secret looms.
Right. And someone else developed a loom.
Until somebody stole one of the looms and exported it to England, at which point England became wealthy off of. But that's beside the point.
I think there's a patent violation there somewhere.
If they had patents, which
right,
they didn't. But the point is that when a country or an economy or a part of the world becomes very, very wealthy through exporting some raw material
that only they have,
eventually the world will figure out how to duplicate it, how to find it somewhere else, or the country that is exporting it will run out of it.
It's very much like the Silk Road and silk before that. People had to figure out how to make silk when only one place could make silk, and now lots of places make silk.
So the issue is that people get used to getting a lot of money for doing nothing.
Look at Spain.
And all
gold
of a sudden,
from the New World.
Right, and then all of a sudden that doesn't work anymore, and they don't have an infrastructure. They don't have skills.
We have to work again? What?
And they collapse into a depression, and it's generally pretty horrible, the depression. And it's called the Dutch curse, and it's going on around the world.
You might call it the Syrian curse now and the Nigerian curse.
I think
and
the Dutch are going to still maintain the corner on
right.
curses.
Right. They are the curse was called the Dutch curse, and they're cursed with that name forever.
Yes, and it's kind of like Obamacare. It's going to stay Obamacare forever.
You can see nations that recover from this, and a good example is Egypt. Egypt is going through a recession. but it's not going through a massive civil war and the depression, because they maintain a lot of other types of industry. Mm-hmm. Where the Russians
have this canal.
Yeah, they have a canal, they have
a
river.
A convenient place to
have a big river and a big canal.
Trade goods, if they're not killing each other.
Yeah, and the fact is that they can grow their own food, where most of Saudi Arabia, that's not the case.
That's right. So what's going on? And there's one other aspect to this, of course, and that is the banks and financial institutions have loaned a truly awesome quantity of money to people who were drilling holes in the ground around the United States and other places.
Said, how can you go wrong with this?
Based on the assumption that oil would remain at $100 a barrel, which
sounds very familiar.
Which frankly is absurd to the extreme. If you're going supply, the laws of supply and demand. Apparently, bankers don't understand that.
Well, they didn't. They messed it up with the whole collateralized mortgage obligations just a few years back, and they said, "Well, we're not doing that again. Let's get into oil.
Let's produce a great deal of oil, and of course, the price won't go down. It'll stay at $100.
Should be fine. Yeah, there's no problem here.
And as a result, when the markets take a look at a big chunk of our economy, which is finance. And they look at the banks, and they look at the profitability of the banks, and they suddenly realize that all of that, those loans that they made to drill holes in the ground are not necessarily particularly stable or safe loans at this point.
They're not as valuable as they thought they were, maybe.
And lo and behold, ladies and gentlemen, they securitized those loans, and they're out there floating around in what are called bank loan securities, which, for whatever reason, have been the one of the more popular ways of gaining income in a portfolio recently. People have been busily salting their income full of bank loan securities.
There's always a bubble. There's always a bubble. At any given time, we went from real estate to gold to oil. The next one, we'll be able to tell you what it is as it's happening.
Right.
And when we look at oil, we told you on gold, we told you on real estate, we told you on oil.
I think it's presidential futures.
Yeah. All you have to do is look around and say, where are a bunch of amateurs that have absolutely no technical ability able to make a massive amount of money for a very little amount of work?
They're all running.
That's a bubble.
They're running for president.
Running for president.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if today's August 22nd, 2015, you're welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And by the way, I had a conversation with a gentleman who trades futures contracts in oil.
Mm-hmm. Does he trade the future and the present?
I don't completely. Yeah, I think he probably does.
I think we have a tense issue here.
Yes, we do. But the tensors are intense. Intense. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, camping is intense.
Right. And he says that there's kind of a consensus among the people doing the trading that it's going to 30.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me.
And
it could drop below that.
At $30 a barrel, we begin to see some economic repercussions. And one of the reasons that the markets are down, and notice that they took the nosedive on Friday because things happen over the weekend.
Right. People are afraid they're going to sell. They're going to sell on a Friday, generally.
And
Thursday, Friday.
What we've got is a situation right now where nobody really knows the degree of risk, financial risk, that's in the financial markets, not the stock market or the bond market, the financial markets, the banks, per se.
Yeah.
Only it's more than just banks.
Banks and insurance.
Nobody goes around and tallies up, say, okay, how much money has been loaned out to somebody based on an assumption of $100 or $80 a barrel of oil? And when oil gets down to around 30, if it stays there, and there's a fairly high likelihood it will get down to 30 and stay there, months and months ago, I think maybe even a couple of years ago, we called $35. It was going to go back to 35. Purely on history.
It was a year ago we said that.
Said that based on the fact that it used to be $20, and if you just plug in the inflation, it's $35, and it's probably going to rotate back down around $35. And let's just say it gets down to $35 a barrel, which is not very far off, and stays there. Frankly, nobody knows what corporations are exposed to that risk, what banks are exposed to that risk. And since the last time around we had something like this happen, where we had an oversupply causing a collapse in prices and some loans that are likely to become non-performing, was houses.
Yeah, but houses are a much larger part of the economy
right.
than the production of oil.
But still, what I'm trying to say is people are quite afraid of this. Factually, I don't think it's going to be even a tiny fraction of the issue. But the biggest single reason that the market went down last week is because people really enjoy being afraid. And August is a really, really good time to be afraid because the people who aren't natively afraid are on vacation. They're called wealthy people. And when you really, really, really want to be afraid, if you look hard enough, you can generally find something to be afraid of. And so, as we mentioned a little earlier,
even if you don't look, especially if you don't look, you can find something to be afraid of.
Right. There's a
bunch of people. Just close your eyes and be afraid.
There was a whole bunch of people on Wall Street on Friday with their finger on the sell button, and all it took was one of them to hit the button, and the rest of them stampeded after them, not wanting to be the last person to sell. Factually, the cooler heads, the people who I follow and read their comments, who are among the more astute and by definition successful investors, are pretty much unanimous, and they're in that this is a random correction which will be justified by a lot of discussion, but there is no meaning to it any more than there is to any other random thing that occurs right. on, that occurs anywhere in the markets, is something that we need to ride through. And
if you have extra money, extra being a very strange word to apply to money, as most
yes.
people that I know don't consider any money that they have extra. But if you have money that you could invest, this is a good time to do mm-hmm. it because everything's on sale.
And sometime in the next couple of weeks, the market will find a bottom. And then, by the way, if you want to take a look at this from a very rational, logical point of view.
Oh, no, that's no fun.
I know. The S&P 500 dividend yield is now greater than the interest rate on the 10-year treasury.
Yep.
That is the single most obvious and significant indicator that stocks are undervalued. And the reason is, in a given 10-year period, stocks tend to recover very, very reliably. So if you put your money in a treasury bond, rationally, a note rather, 10-year note, versus putting your money in the S&P 500 stock index, odds are in any 10-year period you will do a lot better than in the S&P 500 index. But both cases,
just based on history,
you're taking a 10-year risk window.
Yeah.
And the end result is that when you actually get paid more money in the form of dividends, to put your money in something that's going to make a lot more money in all likelihood, the markets have become irrational and stocks have become too low.
Right. The reality here is that the reason long term, the historic reason in economic sense, why people make more money in the stock market historically mm-hmm. is something called risk premium. You're paying for corrections.
Which has something to do with the cost of a game, right?
I think so. Huh. Yeah.
You pay extra for the game risk.
Right, risk.
Got it.
Right. Yeah. So knowing that you have big drops in the market is what causes the markets to be able to make mm-hmm. more money than the bank long term.
And the other thing is, right now, the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index earnings yield, that's the actual profits that they make, two-thirds of which get reinvested back into stuff that companies are doing to make them more profits,
right,
is over 6%. So it's basically, if you were to buy, and I'm not suggesting in any way you do so, you buy into the S&P 500 in some form or fashion, you would wind up with a 6% yield. 4% of that, little under 4% of that, is going back in by the companies being reinvested back into making more stuff to make more money, and about 2% of that, a little over 2%, 2.3 I think it is being paid out to you as the investor. Now, if I've got a 6% yield thing over here that's liable, that historically goes up in value, and I have a 2% yield, this is the treasury over here, that cannot go up in value, which one should I get?
And this is something that I've said for quite a lot the last couple of weeks. Mark this date on the calendar and look back at it in a year. Because right now we're seeing this big drop in people. The headlines are all about the big, massive drop in the market. 52 weeks ago, a year ago, we were up 3% from here. We've had a 3% drop over a year.
Oh,
it's a lot easier.
Terrible.
But we're about out of time for this hour.
We have to come back next hour and do this again.
If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail available on the weekends and real people to answer on the weekdays locally at
947-1111.
You can reach that same number toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.